Okay, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good to the economy because everybody managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is still Debbie Swanwick from organicnz.org.nz. Now, we're going to do something that we very rarely do on this show. We're going to take some callers. So the call-in number, if you're living in New Zealand, is the number one.
The number one. 218-339-8525. To get into the show.
218-339-8525. Now, you know, interestingly enough, organics, GMOs, GE, whatever you want to call it, are actually really hearty issues. And incidentally, also make quite a hearty soup while you're at it. The main thing that I really want to be hearing from the callers on is what their opinions are on exactly how to stop this. You know, good advocacy organizations. You know how the word lobbyist, Debbie, has become a dirty word? I've realized that lobbyist, like freedom fighter, can mean two things. You're either a scumbag advocating for other scumbags or you're a good person advocating for ordinary people.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it certainly does. But that's what we consider that we're actually doing. We're constantly lobbying, whether it's our central or local government, to implement policies that protect the purity of our food, so that it doesn't include GE pesticides or additives, because no one wants that stuff in their food. And the only reason that they're typically consuming it is because they don't know it's there. So,
see, I always wanted to have just a little bit of pesticide in a salt shaker or something like that, just to add to my food if I wanted.
That's right, glass of Roundup with breakfast and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A little eyedropper, you know.
Yeah. So, but the market that's, or the demographic that's really driving the organics market is actually young families. So, you know, people tend to actually start looking at their food when they have kids, and they're actually looking at the safety and, you know, what they're putting, what they're giving to their kids to eat. So, and the fluoride issue that you've just raised is especially pertinent to breastfeeding mums, because obviously you're putting fluoridated water into your kids' bottles. Not breastfeeding mums, but, you know, new mums that are bottle feeding. So, and that's quite a high concentration for a young child.
It gives on new meaning to suck it till you're blue in the face.
Yeah, that's right, it does. So it's also a good strategy that the breastfeeding mums advocate on a frequent basis as to why you should actually do that versus bottle feeding your child.
Yeah.
So when you look at the dangers of fluoride and mass medication.
Well, there was a new film come out. Who was it? I think it was Paul Wittenberger and Chris Maple, called The Great Culling. First of three documentaries, the first about the water and about the fluoride in the water. And what I found very interesting is that they tested a whole bunch of these bottled waters, and they all tested positive for fluoride. They tested juices that tested positive for fluoride. They tested, soda and soft drinks and things, and they tested positive for fluoride. It's in everything now.
Yeah. It's not a good look, eh? So, but it's at the end of the day, it's mass medication, and just that alone is wrong. You know, whether or not you agree with fluoride or you think you need it for your teeth, I mean, the stats actually prove you don't, and that's also why it's written on toothpaste that you don't consume it. But you just shouldn't be mass medicating the general public. There's just something extremely undemocratic when you haven't got their authority to do so that you're actually doing that.
Yeah, and I had a advocate against fluoride on the show from Ireland, and he did the statistical breakdown for me. About 30% of water in Ireland gets lost due to, you know, cracks in pipes and and things like that underneath the ground that people haven't haven't found yet. Yeah. And of that, so that you're losing 30% of your fluoride with the 30% of the water that you're using out there, right?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, there's a whole bunch of other systems. I can't remember exactly what he said, but the point being, what the hell is the point in fluoridating the water? Because all the children that have tooth decay problems don't drink water. They drink fizzy drinks. They drink the sugary stuff that gives them the tooth decay in the first fracking place.
I would watch it if I was you. You might be putting some ideas into Coke's mind as to what they can do with it.
Another mate of mine told me that Coke syrup, you know, like the real thicky toffee kind of tar-like syrup, you know, that comes off the ships and stuff like that, is a level 6 hazardous material out of 6 possible levels, okay? Yeah. And then they ship it for your hazmat truck. Like, here's how you know it's a level 6 biotoxin. Have one breath, you're dead in 5 seconds, okay? Then they ship it via hazmat truck to a local bottling plant, water it down with contaminated fluoridated municipal water, sell it to you, and this is the wonder of marketing. Guess what they call it? The real thing.
Yeah, that's right. We've been having conversations recently with some of our food suppliers in New Zealand who have advocating that some products are actually natural and the real thing. In fact, one of late, because something that's happened just in the past year is our stock feed, which used to be GE-free, is now contaminated. So Cargill's, who's one of the main suppliers out of Australia for New Zealand stock feed, can't confirm nor deny. Does this ring any bells? Can neither confirm nor deny that our stock feed has been contaminated with GE, with genetic engineering. So
that just confirms it, doesn't it?
Yeah. So as a result, you know, our stock feed now has GE. So it's actually coming through the food chain, and that's also going into our dairy industry, which is pretty scary. So we've actually been having conversations recently with some of our stock feed suppliers, and we think we've actually got one of our stock feed suppliers who's picked up the baton and said, yeah, I'll look at it. And one of the interesting things is they're actually looking at taking out the American soy and replacing it with Indian soy, and, you know, which we're just rapt about because Indian soy is GE-free. So, you know, that's going to be a huge market and a huge potential market that America's actually going to lose if they don't pick up the game, because we've got people in New Zealand that are going, look, you know, we might not actually want organic stock feed, but we definitely want GE-free stock feed. And at the end of the day, anyone that's transitioning across to a pure food supply, we're more than happy to help them along. And so if we can get a stock feed supplier in New Zealand that supports a GE-free policy, then we're more than happy to pat them on the back. And you know, hopefully too, I think they'll actually pick up a market because there's a market there that's actually demanding it. People that have got backyard chickens or they're growing their own pork or, you know, they want a product that's, because they're actually doing it to be sustainable, they want a product that's actually going to be as 100% pure as what they can get. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an interesting game anyway, because I think what you'll actually see is markets, people that are actually paying attention to markets and looking at the almighty dollar ironically, are going, this is what the consumer wants, and if we just give it to them, we will not only be satisfying the consumer, but we'll actually be putting money in our back pocket. And, you know, we're really happy to support business in doing that if they're making good decisions that are about the consumer, but not when they're self-absorbed and just thinking about their own bottom line at the expense of what's in the best interests of the consumer.
Mm. I heard of a business practice called a triple bottom line. So you got to make money. I mean, nobody wants to be in business to not make money, you know, otherwise you're working for nothing. And that's called slavery.
Yeah.
Second bottom line is it's got to be sustainable, meaning you've got to source materials that regrow or something like that, so you don't do any permanent damage and you can put back what you take out.
Yeah.
And thirdly is guaranteeing that you don't do any damage to the people who consume your product. You know,
yeah.
I think those are very reasonable. The problem is people only want the one.
That's right. Yeah, but ironically, I mean, Big Agritech argues that we're not sustainable. That organics isn't sustainable.
Only perpetually poisoning the ground and groundwater with massive fossil fuels is sustainable, right?
Yeah, that's right. So they're actually, you know, one of the big arguments that they espouse is that we've got a huge population increase forecast and we can't feed the world. And the fact of the matter is,
where did they get this statistic from? The birth and death rates in the Western world are like 1.6. You need at least 2.6 in order to prevent your own extinction.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But, you know, the facts of the matter are that we have a world where we have incredible rates of obesity in the Western world and incredible rates of poverty. It's not an issue of feeding the world. It's an issue about getting distribution into countries that have got issues of poverty and, you know, where they're dealing with how do we feed the starving. We have the answer for that. The most drought-resistant crops that there are available are organic. But in addition to that, we currently waste 40% of our food. So, you know, we don't actually need to produce any more food. We just need to figure out how to get the food that we currently produce to the people that actually need it. And that's not the way economies are actually set up, because if you were to do that, rather than dumping huge amounts of food, it would bring your bottom line down. So that's what the issue is, really. So this talk about, you know, feeding the world and how we need genetic engineering to do that, no, we don't. We don't need that at all. In fact, that's just going to compromise it further, as we've seen with the BT corn crops last year.
Did you know that the rich list was just released? Okay.
Yeah.
And it determined that there were a hell of a lot more people now in the billionaires club than there once were. I thought that was very interesting. More billionaires. And more people dying of starvation at the same time.
Yeah, the irony. Maybe those billionaires could actually try feeding some of the world starving. So,
if they wanted to, we've got the money. Okay, we've got the money, we've got the resources, we've got the talent, we've got the know-how, we've got the technology to feed every single person, clothe every single person, and house every single person. But it ain't being done.
No, it's not being done. But, you know, if governments won't do that, the people can do it themselves. So, you know, subsistence farmers actually growing their own produce is one way to do that. But what is actually happening in the world is people like Monsanto are jumping in, selling their GE seed to subsistence farmers. It's a Terminator seed, so they have to go back to Monsanto the following year, buy more seed that they can't afford, buy more chemicals to actually control the pests. You know, pesticide use has risen dramatically with GE crops. And I've been hearing talk recently from people saying, you know, when I go to the supermarket now, I'm actually making a conscious decision, whether it's about organics or not, but I'm making a conscious decision not to buy American produce, because I know that their pesticide levels are ridiculously high because of all the GE crops they're growing, and I don't want to be feeding that to my family. So, and, you know, as a first port of call, I think that's actually commendable. I think it's, you know, a well-educated purchasing decision as well. So if you can buy locally grown produce that hasn't got that amount of spray on it, why wouldn't you do that?
What's interesting, though, is that we're paying a huge amount in New Zealand for our dairy and meat, And we're one of the that's like one of our primary products. I don't understand why it's so expensive for us to get what's right here and why it's so cheap for everybody else to get what's from way across the world.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
Do you have any idea why that is?
Well, you know, our meat industry is based predominantly on our export markets. But, you know, we've got so many people that are in the supplier chain now that are taking a cut on it because farmers aren't making huge amounts of money on meat. And actually, if you look at people that are doing home kills, I think are paying something like $6 a kilo for a beast. So, and you look at how much you're paying for steak or something, which is $30 a kilo, and someone's making a lot of money out of our meat industry. It's not the New Zealand farmer, though. So there's just so many people in that supply chain that add their costs on, and you throw supermarkets into that mix as well, and that becomes the price that you're actually paying. And we've certainly got quite restrictive legislation around home kills as well to make that an option for the general populace. But I think that the market that's really being held to ransom at the moment in New Zealand is people that live in cities. You know, urban New Zealand doesn't have the same advantages that rural New Zealand does because they can actually do their own home kills. They have access to raw milk. They can grow their own produce because of land and you know, what's actually forecast. Some people are saying we're now 5 years into a food crisis, is that rural land prices are going to go up because the new currency is going to be food. And I very much doubt the new currency is going to be food that's contaminated. It will be food that is pure and you know where it's come from. And that's what, you know, the advantages of living in rural New Zealand is that you do know that. And the advantages of buying organic is that you know that as well. So you know that it's actually a pure product, which you can't say the same for conventional or, you know, GE food supplies.
Yeah. Well, it becomes about look, we can't rely on the educators and we can't rely on the legislators and we can't rely on the reporters. You got to rely on yourself and take personal responsibility for what goes in your mouth. Do you know where it came from? No, you don't. No, you don't. Nobody knows where the hell their food came from. They only know where it goes. Down the gullet and out the hatch. Randall Steiner, North Dakota, calling in. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. When along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. And I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
I've been to Reno, Chicago.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that goes everywhere where others fear to tread. It's the most fun 2 hours you can ever have in talk radio while learning about your own subsequent extermination and enslavement. My very special guest is Debbie Swanwick, and we have a caller in, Debbie. His name is Randall Steen, I think, from North Dakota. You're on the air.
Hi,
hello,
Randall.
My friend. Hey, the reason I call in is I live in kind of the breadbasket of the U.S., and up here in the Red River Valley, it's more suited to sugar beets, and we grow a heck of a lot of them up here. There's piles of them, windrows of them everywhere.
Yeah.
But the reason I felt compelled to call in is supposedly these GE crops, they are a hybrid of sorts where they're not fertile, and supposedly this genetic material can't get out in the open. And what I've been seeing is these GE crops, the fields of them, during crop rotation, I'll see corn crops after having been, beet crops after having been sprayed, having corn come up that is BT resistant. So apparently they last into the next season, and they are there for good, meaning that they're viable, they're breeding.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly the case. So, you know, we had a situation in New Zealand a couple of months ago where there was some uncrushed GE seed that actually came in into the South Island, luckily, from a shipment via Australia, which is, you know, pretty dangerous stuff, because if it had happened to come into another port, that could have quite easily grown. So, you know, there was certainly a lot of discussion around it at the time about uncrushed GEC, but what's actually going on in the States at the moment is that same issue, and I think it's happening in the Midwest. It's been taken to the Supreme Court, is that a farmer has not wanting to actually pay additional money to get a second crop in of, I think he was actually growing corn or maize, he's actually gone and bought some GE stock feed and planted it and grown a second crop. So Monsanto are now taking him to court, saying that they've got license over that and he needed to pay them for it. And he's saying that, you know, he actually bought that stock feed crop and he shouldn't actually have to pay additional money from it just because he's actually procured a second crop from another source. But, I mean, GE you can't contain. They say that they're sterile, but you know, no science is 100% at the end of the day, and that's the same story that's actually being touted about this GM salmon that they're talking about releasing at the end of this year. And the FDA looks like they're going to rubber stamp that, and they're professing that that's sterile as well. But the reality of the matter is that, you know, maybe 1% of the GE salmon most probably isn't. So that has implications on anything else. And that's one of the biggest arguments against GE, is that it will contaminate, and it will contaminate every other possible food source that we have, whether it's organic or conventional, and then it takes away the consumer's right to choose and the farmer's right to choose as well what they're growing. So in your case, just, you know, your story just exemplifies that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And 1%
is way too high. I mean, geez, gun waiting to go off, you know.
Yeah.
That's just...
Yeah, it is. It's a huge gun waiting to go off because, you know, these companies are actually holding the world population, you know, they're holding a gun to their head, basically. And we know that. We've actually seen that. And certainly the stories that we've actually heard suggest that that's exactly what's actually happening. But as soon as they get contamination, then, and nothing else can exist, we've got no way of going back. That's the agricultural dead end, and that's why so many people oppose GE, whether or not you believe in the science, is that it removes choice.
Wasn't it the green revolution in India that put so many farmers out of business and nearly caused the starvation pandemic?
The green revolution in what regard?
Well, these seeds that were water hogs, not GE, but they were hybrid, and the hybridization really was demanding of water, which isn't that they have in India, and was leading to a lot of crop failure in India and a lot of suicide, farmers committing suicide and starvation.
India is just such a sad story, really, because the subsistence farmers over there are just being pushed every which way but loose by these big corporates and being dictated to. But, you know, some of the stories that are coming out from India now is that people are actually going back to organics because they've been left trying to farm in a dust bowl, and the only way to actually farm sustainable is to get their soil sorted, and the only way to do that is with organics. You know,
I heard I heard that there was a massive push by Monsanto to get their Terminator seeds and chemical farming practices into India, and as a result, it toxified the soil, dried it out, and that was what was leading to farmer suicides. And I saw a documentary where a New Zealand organic maestro, as it were, would visit these villages in India and show them how to use what they had available, usually cow horns and cow manure and things like that to fertilize their crops. One particular thing that I found was particularly interesting is if you take a cow horn and it's hollow and you fill it full of cow manure and you bury it, it actually becomes a really potent fertilizer.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's it. Organics is actually giving people, it's empowering people to produce, to be self-sustainable so that you don't have to rely upon, America to actually supply GE seed, basically. So, but the real tragedy in India is the amount of people that have actually killed themselves over this issue. You know, it really is life or death. So as we've seen with the Seralini study last year over these rats and, you know, whether or not you're actually eating GE, which has huge implications on your health and your lifespan, or whether or not you're growing it, certainly has huge implications on your lifespan as well, especially if you're a subsistence farmer. So, but it's a real tragedy. And, you know, these big agritech organisations just need to be brought to account for playing that game, because it really is a playing Russian roulette with people's lives.
Well, I think that they're really playing Russian roulette with the revolving door, you know, between these massive agribusiness and the administration.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, and the fact our scientific community is actually now being compromised by them as well is pretty sad. I was actually at a meeting this week with one of our supporters who's actually an ex-GE scientist who now is so dramatically opposed to it. But, of course, she's no longer working in the industry, and she's got some pretty, you know, interesting and sad stories to tell about the fact that, you know, people don't say anything because their jobs are at risk or their funding's at risk. And scientists shouldn't be put in that position. You know, we've always touted scientists as giving independent advice and doing independent research studies, but that's really not the case anymore.
Unless it's some scientist in his back shed or something like that, in which case he'll just get raided by the FDA or FCC or something.
Yeah. And someone will publicly take him out in the media that his research is totally unfounded, despite the fact that is, you know, nothing like some of the research that goes on with Monsanto and big agritechs when they're doing GE studies, but their studies are only conducted over 90 days. You know, the thing about Seralini is that study was actually conducted over the lifetime of the rat, and that's what actually is going to, you know, so it's tobacco science that they're employing, suggesting that they're actually doing studies that are over 90 days. It's not going to tell you anything over a 90-day period. So they're doing studies that actually support the GE argument, but they're certainly not scientific.
Yeah, the scientific industry of all kinds, I think, has just been corrupted, and I just there's two kinds of ways that you can corrupt science. As you mentioned before, you know, threats, you know, losing their money and what have you. And the other one is you threaten them with loss of credibility. And what's ironic in these times is that to tell the truth is something that will lose you your credibility in the scientific field. Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that bizarre? Yeah, really bizarre. But there are some people doing it at a great personal risk to themselves because, you know, some people have, had resulting personal injury as a consequence of coming out and making a stand against big agritech and saying this is wrong. and you shouldn't be feeding people this. And even the precursor to the FDA rubber stamping GE, their scientists were actually saying the same 20 years prior. You know, we really need to do more intensive studies about GE and the effect on consumers. And, you know, they were just totally disregarded, and the FDA just stormed ahead with their plans to actually bring it through the food chain. And they've actually done that by, you know, putting it into sugar beets and corn. And so all oils that are actually put in products have actually got GE. So, yeah.
Hmm. Randleston, still there?
Can I mention one thing, plug one thing before I go?
Yeah.
I just wanted to plug the great Australian Bill Mollison. If anyone listening doesn't know who he is, go on YouTube, Google it, Bill Mollison. He's pretty much the father of permaculture. And I have a personal story in regards to that, where I actually went out with my 7-year-old daughter when we were living in Pennsylvania, and we went out and picked knotweed. It's a cousin to buckwheat or rhubarb, and it tastes just like rhubarb. And we cut it at 12 to 18 inches in April or May, March when it first came up, end of March, and we put up about 20 quarts of something that's as good as rhubarb, not quite as tart, and mixed with strawberries, and made pies all summer. And there, you know, if you want to figure out how to get out of this GMO rat race, where even Freshfield says they can't keep GMO out, well, if you cook it yourself, you know it's GE free.
That's it. I mean, I think that's why we've actually seen, you know, a 300 or 400% increase in the past 5 years. And gardens in New Zealand, and the biggest, ironically, has actually been in Christchurch. We've seen a huge resurgence in New Zealand with organic gardening, and people in community gardens and school gardens. And of course, that stood them in really good stead when they've actually had these earthquakes, and your food security is at risk. And that's definitely what we advocate in a big way, is take responsibility for yourself and grow your own, because then you know where it's coming from.
Yeah. I do think that in Christchurch, the whole liquefaction problem, basically, you're an idiot if you build a city on a swamp to start with.
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever you're growing probably can't be that good. And then on top of that, you've got earthquakes where all this mucky, salty, wet, sandy kind of crap kind of comes out and sort of envelops everything and sinks your house like it's a Tarzan movie or something like that.
Yeah.
You better have yourself some raised flower beds, methinks. And indeed, there's been the Ellerslie Flower Show. Interestingly enough, is relocated to, it looks like, the biggest flower show in New Zealand, right? And it's recently relocated down to Christchurch, and apparently they're going really well. Some dude won the competition because he had a whole bunch of transplanted plants or something like that in his big spectrographic kind of plant display McThingy. I don't know the whole identifier, but Christchurch, mate, seriously, I've been there several times. Some very hardy people down there.
Well, it's kind of, you know, Christchurch is actually called our garden city, so it's really good to see that it's actually living up to its name. Good on Christchurch.
Yeah, better than Quicksand City.
Yeah.
Quicksand City slickers, you know, Billy Crystal. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Debbie Swanwick is my guest. Wanting to take your calls, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And you're calling in from New Zealand, I think there's a 001 in front of that. Back in a minute.
Bonkers. We'll be right back. bitch. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back.
Some people pay for thrills, but I get my.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment for this episode today. I was up at 4 o'clock this morning to go on the Jack Blood show, and he had technical difficulties, and it didn't happen. You know how frustrating it is to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to find out that it's for no reason? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That's nasty. My very special guest, who is not so, quite so nasty, is Debbie Swanwick.
Benny.
I hope you've enjoyed your little stint on the show here today. I mean, first it was going to be, well, we're going to have you on. We're first going to have you on for like one segment for like 17 minutes, and then I had a cancellation, and then we had you on for an hour, and then I had another cancellation, and here we are in the second hour at the very end.
Yeah. As you do. Yeah. No, it's been great. I mean, it's always good to be able to speak to people and share our story, share their story, really, is what it's all about. Because all we're doing is advocating for consumers and what they're actually wanting with regards to their food, which, you know, they keep telling us the same thing. We don't want GE in our food. We don't want pesticides. We don't want additives. And the other issue is we want animals to be treated right. You know, we had a recent situation in New Zealand where 80% of New Zealanders are actually wanting battery cages banned. And what was really sad is that our government's actually chosen to introduce colony cages. So whereas in the past 3 or 4 chickens are actually living together, colony cages is where 60 chickens are going to be living in a 3-metre cage. So, you know, they haven't actually taken on board what consumers are actually wanting and how they want their food to be grown. So, and at the end of the day, that's not coming into effect until, I think it's 2023 or something like that, whereas with pork in this country, New Zealanders have said the same thing about sauerkrauts, and sauerkrauts in this country are going to be banned in 2015, so which is fantastic. So for some reason, the government officials obviously prefer pork over chicken is all I can say.
See, I've wondered about this this battery farming and cage farming kind of thing, like how much food do they produce per area of land in order to and conversely, if you got rid of them, how exactly would you compensate for that shortfall in the food supply, or would there even really be one, because considering how much food wastage there is as it is?
Yeah, well, New Zealanders are big consumers, especially, you know, eggs is a major source of protein for us. So we consume 1 billion eggs a year. But this has always been our argument against factory farming is we believe in quality, not quantity. So, and, you know, you can actually say someone can actually be overweight, for example, but be malnourished. So, and what we know to be true with organics and growing heritage seeds actually is that it provides more nutritional value for people, and that's what we want to see, you know, healthy, safe food for people, not food that's actually grown with unfair practices or contaminated.
You know, the medical industry that makes a hell of a killing off of sick people probably wouldn't like that.
No. But, yeah, I mean, that's where the East have actually got one up on us, because their practices are a lot more preventative, whereas our medical practices are a lot more reactionary. But one of the things that we advocate for is, you know, clean up your diet and then you don't end up with all this sickness. So, and, you know, research actually tells us that, but anecdotal evidence actually tells us that as well. You know, the 92-year-old our founding member that you were actually speaking of, Margaret Jones, she's just the living epitome of the benefits of organics, having a healthy lifestyle.
And I believe there's a video of Margaret Jones on my YouTube channel, folks. So if you want to, I think she had an interview with Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, this magazine here, produced in New Zealand, and conversely, on the reverse, New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. And, yeah, it was quite interesting. And I don't know. I have a real fondness for my elders for some reason. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because they've seen more than me, and I'm a young whippersnapper who knows that he should just shut up and listen sometimes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you search Margaret Jones on my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, you should be able to come up with that video there. You know, we've got about 5 minutes left in the broadcast, Debbie. I was wondering what actually motivated you to get into this, because I've talked to a number of activists over my time, and usually the reason why they do what they do is either they were really, really successful in the industry of some kind, and then they had a fall from grace, you know, like somebody really badly shafted them and they spent the rest of their life trying to get back at them, or they just kind of grow up in a family where it becomes inevitable that they'd be an advocate for other people's health and welfare and what have you. I was wondering what your story was.
Yeah, well, I can't say it was either, actually. You know, I grew up in suburbia, I've just always, I suppose the deciding factor for me in my career would be, I actually started my career working in marketing for a big pharmaceutical company. Well, the pharmacy industry anyways, which advocated for pharmaceuticals. And so I think I'd actually been working there for a year, and I decided that, you know, it was just shallow. There was just nothing behind it. So, and I went back and did my degree, and when I finished it, ironically, I went to the States. So I decided to actually do a big OE around the States, and I lived in Boston for a period of time and saw the homelessness issue that was going on in Boston, then went and lived in Ireland for a period of time, saw the drugs issue that was going on there, and I thought, you know, I've always been about making a difference, and I thought, here's how I can actually, you know, use what I know and what I've been trained in and actually make a difference. And I've always done something about the environment, because I just think, you know, the environment is literally what feeds us, and it's always been a key factor in my life. So, you know, this was just an obvious move for me, where I can take my skill set and change the world. So
nothing like a bit of disillusionment with the way things are going and a bit of life experience to activate you, eh?
Yeah, that's right. You know, and that's what it's about. You know, it makes a difference to people, and it makes a difference to you too. You know, they say that working in a not-for-profit or for a good cause adds X amount of years to your life. So I strongly advocate for that.
Yeah. Now, there was notes that I was putting on here. Oh, yeah, tax lobbying and volunteering. You know what's interesting? In a society where everybody's taxed almost 50 to 60% of their income, if you add it all up,
yeah,
they don't really have a hell of a lot of time left for volunteering.
No, they don't. They don't. Yeah, so, you know, but it definitely, especially with, I was reading some research quite recently about teenage kids, you know, and how to make them feel better about themselves, get them doing some volunteering. But at the very least, if you can't get them doing some volunteering, get them working in your own garden, you know, so that they've got a sense of pride in what they're doing. And this is, I think, what's actually happening with community gardens. People are actually reconnecting with their neighbours, because that's a lost art. People are just too busy, you know. But they're reconnecting with their neighbours over a cause, which is, you know, we want safe, fresh, healthy food, and instilling some pride in not only themselves, but giving them some skills and instilling some pride in their communities. And I think that's the way of the future, you know, that we just need to get back to our communities and stop this corporate takeover that's, you know, just breaking people off from who they intuitively know they are, you know.
Yeah. It reminds me of I took a trip down to the Temple of the Four Winds, and this is some kind of sacred place among the Māori. I'm the first journalist to ever be invited down there in history, so wow. I'm pretty honoured. And I'm not a journalist, I'm not even trained, but I still do it better than most of the trained ones. And what was it? We were stopped in Tikawiti to just get some cash out of the cash machine, right?
Yeah.
And me with these three Māori kaumātua, these elders, looking around and just like so many young kids in the street. Nothing to do. Yeah. Nobody managing them. No projects. No hope. No prospects. Yeah. And, and it deeply saddened them to see. And, you know, I felt really gutted about it as well. And, you know, kids are pretty freaking industrious so long as they're actually having fun while doing something and have got something to show for it. You know, you produce really healthy individuals. But unfortunately, society it just sort of allows them to fall by the wayside, and they don't have to. And you don't have to wait for a government to come in and tell you to do this or whatever. Just be an individual. Make it happen. What are you waiting for?
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think schools are actually now picking up the charge, especially around gardening and teaching kids how to do it. And, it's good stuff. That's really good to see happening.
Well, let us see more of it, I hope. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to myself and Debbie Swanwick from organicnz.org.nz. .org.nz, of course. And, I guess what we're really listening to here is, ladies and gentlemen, don't swallow everything you get fed by the mainstream media. We'll see you again sometime, folks.